Hi, Whispering Gallery friends, and welcome to the Hasita Head Special. It's a special episode we're bringing to you from recordings I made along the Pacific Coast Highway 101 in Oregon. I was recently up there, and as you listen, you might envision the historic lightkeeper's home at Hasita Head. It's a white home with a red roof and a covered porch. The home is surrounded by a white picket fence. And during my visit in mid-October, the sweet peas were still in bloom, the herbs were doing great, and pumpkins adorned the stairs to the porch. The area is very green, and there are many pine trees all around. The Hasita Head Lighthouse is a working lighthouse that first went into service in the spring of 1894. It's a short walk up to Hasita Head Lighthouse, where it flashes its warning light at the top of some pretty rough cliffs. You'll hear me talking to my husband Eric in the recordings as we walked up to the lighthouse after dark. Phone cameras don't do justice to lighthouses at night, and really even with a good traditional camera, it is still difficult to capture the magic. Please join us as we explore the mystery of the ghost said to linger at the Hasita Head's lightkeeper's home. Eric and I are headed up to the Hasita Head Lighthouse. We're walking out of the lighthouse keeper's bed and breakfast and heading toward the trail. We can see the lighthouse working right now. The beam is heading out in its circular path. We can see it hitting the coast across the bay from where we are, the cove. There's an American flag flying in the breeze. And the ocean is crashing on the beach. The guy at the Vortex House said he saw a bear print. He thought it was a big footprint, and he put a dollar down by it for size and taking pictures, and he realized it was just a really large bear's footprint.
I did find it very weird that he said there are no birds there. I did see some insects, but...
I didn't hear that about the birds.
Oh yeah, you were in the bathroom. There's no wildlife at the Vortex site.
That is weird.
And snakes, but there's no mammals. And no birds. Or very few birds. They fly in and then usually fly out.
I'm up at the Hasita Head Lighthouse. It's after dark, and the lighthouse beams are passing overhead as the Fresnel, I believe it's pronounced, lens is lit and rotating. There are some lights out at the distance. They appear to be on the horizon line of what I can see, blending in with the fog and the ocean. This is basically on the edge of a cliff so that the lights can do the most benefit. From a diagram I saw earlier, the lighthouses from Umpequa to Hasita Head, and there's another shown, the lights in a circular manner overlap each other to give the best coverage as signals. Along the coast of Oregon, Highway 101, it's pretty stormy out. Rain is coming and going. There's a brisk wind blowing. I read this morning that there was a gale warning. I wanted to read you a story about the Hasita Head Lighthouse. This is in the Register Guard, registerguard.com, article entitled Hasita Head's Ghost Story. This was written by Sherry Burry McDonald, posted on October 31st, 2017 at 12:01 a.m. and updated October 31st at 2018 at 8:37 a.m. With that last update, it begins, Florence. An apparition of a gray-haired woman wearing a late Victorian-era dress,
a wispy gray figure floating down the hallway. Sounds of sweeping and furniture being moved at night coming from the locked, empty attic. These are the stories that give the former keeper's house near Hasita Head Lighthouse north of Florence its reputation as one of the most haunted places on the West Coast. The pleasing white Queen Anne style house with a red roof has overlooked the craggy rocks and pounding waves of the Pacific Ocean for more than a century. From 1894, when the lighthouse first cast its beacon out to sea, to the early 1960s, it housed the men who kept the lighthouse running and their families. It served as a military barracks in World War II and as a satellite campus for Lane Community College in Eugene from 1970 to 1995. For the past 21 years, it has operated as a bed and breakfast, with room for 15 guests, 16 if you count the resident ghost, known as Rue. She has been called that for decades, ever since a group of LCC students huddled around a Ouija board, asking questions, and the board spelled out R-U-E. Manager Misty Anderson said at the house a few days before Halloween. "She doesn't ever do anything scary or harmful or threatening," Anderson said. "It's more like she's watching over the place, watching the house, and looking for her daughter." "There are many versions of the story," Anderson said, settling into a parlor chair. "Do we even know the truth?" she asked. "It's just our version. The theory is that Rue was a lightkeeper's wife, although records can't confirm that because they don't list keepers' wives or children," Anderson said. "And one of them drowned," she said. "We don't know if she drowned in the ocean or in a cistern," Anderson said. "There is an unmarked grave up on the hillside. It's all overgrown and has been left undisturbed. As the story goes, Rue left Hasita Head, and after she died, she returned to the keeper's house looking for her daughter," Anderson said. "The inn doesn't play up its resident ghost. It doesn't have to. Some guests are drawn to Rue, requesting Victoria's room, where the lightkeepers are said to have slept, or the Cape Cove room, where a closet contains the steep stairs leading to the locked attic. Other guests prefer not to know. It can be an asset to a business or a hindrance, depending on how people feel about it. But we're doing fine," Anderson said. The year-round inn typically is at full occupancy from late March through September, and is a popular venue for weddings and other events, she said. Keeper's house and grounds are owned by the U.S. Forest Service, which in 1995 chose Mike and Carol Corgan, executive chefs from Portland, to operate a bed and breakfast in the house. Today, their daughter, Michelle Corgan, chef at Ona Restaurant and Lounge in Yahats, runs the inn, which is known for its elaborate seven-course breakfasts. Probably the most startling encounter with Rue was reported by the Sishula News in 1975. Workman Jim Anderson was cleaning a window in the house's attic and noticed an odd reflection in the glass. He swung around and saw an apparition of an elderly woman wearing a late Victorian-style gown. According to the report, Anderson fled the house and didn't return for several days. When he returned to work on the house's exterior, he refused to go in the attic. He accidentally broke an attic window. He repaired it from the outside and left the broken glass on the attic floor. That night, the house caretakers were awakened by scraping sounds in the attic. They said it sounded like someone sweeping broken glass, although they hadn't learned yet about the broken window. The next morning, they found the glass swept into a neat pile, according to the report. Anderson said one guest recalled that she and her husband were relaxing in the parlor one afternoon when she saw a gray figure float across the hallway near the base of the stairs to the second floor bedrooms. Guest Carol Henderson, who stayed overnight in the Cape Cove room 5 years ago, wrote of her encounter with Rue in the inn's notebook of ghost stories. She said she awakened at 4:30 a.m. and felt a presence climb into the bed beside her for a couple of hours. Need I say I feel strange about this experience, but in a way honored, she wrote. Concerned, but not harmed. Many guests have noticed items in their rooms being moved or rearranged when no one had been in the room, Anderson said. In some cases, items go missing only to be returned later, she said. Things don't go missing for long, Anderson said. If anything has been moved in their room, it usually stays in their room. I can't think of anything that's completely gone. It's just moved. It's nothing scary or negative. We just accept Rue as part of the house. However, Anderson, a self-described scaredy cat, said, enough has happened over the years that she doesn't like to spend the night at the inn anymore. Beth Mazzuccio, who does housekeeping, serving, and other jobs at the bed and breakfast, said she often feels a presence when she goes about her work. Usually, after I get the bed made, there will be a depression as if someone has sat there, she said, as she recently changed linens in the mariner's two-room with a stunning ocean view. Mazzuccio said she probably would scream if she ever actually saw Rue, but she never has, so she isn't bothered. My job is to take care of the place and make it look nice, and I think she likes that, she said. You can follow Sherry Burry McDonald on Twitter at SBURIMCDONALD or email her at Sherry, SHERRI, at registerguard.com. Written by Sherry Burry McDonald, posted on Halloween in 2017 and updated a year later.
The recordings for this episode were done on my phone on location at the Hasita Head Lightkeeper's home and along the Oregon coast. The piano music playing in the background as I read to you Hasita Head's Ghost Story by Sherry Burry McDonald, as published in the Register Guard, was me playing the piano at the Lightkeeper's home, hopefully not disturbing the other visitors. The last episode of The Kraken is in production and will be out to you around Halloween. Watch Instagram for photos to accompany this episode, and if you're wondering, I didn't see a ghost while I was there.